it's a legacy project. We're building a ship here. We're choosing the materials. We have a design. It's going to be a 100-year ship. It's going to take young people out on the ocean, out on the bay, for 100 years to come and teach them about the ocean and serve humanity.
How I finally returned to it was my teacher, Buddhist teacher at the monastery. And we were doing some work kind of late at night to try to get a number of prayer wheels up and running because the next day was a very special, auspicious day. And he was sitting around there. He was drinking some tea not far from where I was working. And he says, Alan. And he called me out. And I said, yes, Rinpoche. And he said, are you afraid to die? I'm kind of shaking my head, thinking, what a weird question. I said, well, I don't really know. I don't think I am. I don't think about it too much. But I don't know how I'll feel about it when the time comes. And he kind of looked at me and like I was full of bullshit. And then he said, what would you regret, Alan? And it hit me like a lightning bolt. If I didn't go out and do this project, whether I got it done or not, wasn't the point, but I had to go back out and do this project. He didn't ask me what it was. He just wanted me to know what it was. So, it hit me like a... I went, oh, my God. That's what teachers are good for. They sort of know what to ask. So that's what got me started again on it, and I took a different attitude, an attitude that even if I fail, I'm just going to keep at it. And so at least I can say I did everything I could.
Walking up to the boathouse, I don't really expect to see what I see, which is a canvas tent the size of a small office building, stretched over beams maybe 100 feet tall, right on prime Northern California real estate on Sausalito's dockyard. Going inside the tent, a wooden boat hull looms overhead. A long set of stairs leads up to the deck. Maybe a dozen men and women are there attending it, like a queen bee and her worker bees, whose own lives are dedicated entirely to hers. It could almost be a scene from the Sausalito dockyard a century ago. And in fact, it's been that long since a wooden ship of this size was built here. There's something very personal and tender going on here in this boathouse.
At this time in my life, now that I'm retired from my full-time job, I really feel the call to spend time on the water and be connected with ships and sailing.
Why?
And well, I think it must be part of my family heritage. You know, the word, my last name is Schopper. It comes from Friesland in northern province of Holland. And it means, Schopper means skipper, you know, the captain of the ship. And so I guess I just feel it's in my blood.
Nothing fishes or sails better than a wooden boat. And I've got 200,000 blue water miles. We used to fish at Buddy Davis out of New Jersey, and we were always high hook. We caught more fish than any of the fiberglass boats. And I think it's just, you know, the motion of the boat and the sounds and all that. It's more natural. It's a natural fiber. You know, it's not like a Clorox bottle, a fiberglass boat. And then sailing offshore, I've raced a lot and done a lot of ocean passages in a wooden boat. And they just, you know, they seem stronger and more flexible, and they just have a life, you know, soul. Wooden boats have a lot more soul to them.
People like to make things, you know, and people like to think what they're making has value. And, you know, building a temple has, or a cathedral has huge value. You know, a pyramid, all these things have energized and people's imagination inspired them to do these things. And they want to leave something, they want to do something. And it's the same thing that today, I mean, people don't change that way, but they don't always have that opportunity. Everything is so, I don't know, corporatized or this or that. It's really to be able to jump into a project like this without all that, it's not simple. But so you can't hardly do that. But if you keep it simple, and we have, and people can just show up and go to work, they come. And they're excited. They're totally excited about it. They're excited as much as I am. They look at it as here's a chance to make something of value that will last hopefully 100 years or more, and tens and thousands, millions, maybe a million kids will sail on this boat. And to think that, well, my grandkids could go, my great-grandkids can go, and they can tell, and they'll say, my grandfather helped build this boat. You know, that's something that's kind of nice to do. How often do you get a chance? You know, we slip away soon enough and leave very little. I mean, we used to, as soon as the snows melted, there would be a ponds would come all around there in Minnesota. So we'd make little rafts and go out in rafts and paddle around, think of ourselves as great adventurers. And, you know, that was play. And it just kept growing into the bigger boats and bigger areas of water for me anyhow. So decided I really wanted to go to the ocean and didn't quite know how to do it. But I was 20, and I made a decision to build a boat, a 40-foot catamaran, up in Minnesota, which I was able to do. I sort of muddled through it and got the boat built in a couple of years and put it in the Mississippi River and went off into the Caribbean.
And so for the next several decades after that, that's pretty much what Alan did. He would build a boat, get people to help, sail it, build another boat, get more people to help, and sail that boat.
The next boat I wanted to be involved with would be like a sail training vessel, a larger vessel, one that I didn't personally own, that was built by an organization, a nonprofit, and felt that that would be a better thing to do with my time. And so for a number of years, we looked at how to do that, you know, get some design work and engineering. But we spent, I don't know, maybe 6 years trying to get it all together, but was not able to really crack the funding nut. I think our preparation was not quite good enough. We were learning a lot. It's quite a big undertaking. You know, you fail at something, you know, you have a lot of resistance to going through that again. And how can I do it? Who am I to build a ship like that? I mean, it takes all this money and takes all this and this. How can I do that? But I still thought that there might be a chance someplace in the back of my mind as the years roll by.
It's a brigantine. So it's made for going downwind mostly. Well, it's got two masts. The shorter mast is in front, and it has square sails on the forward mast. 3-4 yards. You know, I think the longest yard, the main yard, is 60 feet. So that's twice the beam of the boat. So the yards will stick out like 15 feet past the beam, which carries an enormous amount of sail. So you can control. If it's blowing really hard, you can have just one or two up. And if it's super light, you can put all of it up. So it's a real versatile rig for your weather. You got a lot of versatility. And then the aft mast is a Marconi rig. Looking at the boat, it's got a super powerful rig. This boat was Matthew Turner's fastest boat from here to Hawaii in 8 days. And I think the modern day carbon fiber boats have done it in like 7 days, 15 hours. And so, you know, it's comparable still because of that big rig and the slippery hull shape.
The volunteers make a pilgrimage here from across California to make a kind of communion in this boat shed. A communion embodied in the wooden shell of a boat in the making.
So I knew about the project from the beginning.
I mean, are you a boat builder before
this? No, I was a computer jockey.
Oh, OK. Okay.
But he's a tall ship sailor. You can tell by looking at him.
I have sailed like on the square riggers, yeah.
Okay. But how about you guys?
Architect. Well, I see this as something that would be simple.
Uh-huh.
Just kidding.
You're Coast Guard, is that right? Is that what I heard about you?
No, I'm a BMW car salesman. I drove by and saw the sign and came right in. Until I was 21, I built houses and worked for a bricklayer and worked as a construction laborer, and I liked that work. And so I thought, I want to go back and do it. And so, you know, this happened, and I came right over.
Yeah. How many tall ship build projects are there in the world now? Six, eight?
In the past decade, Pride of Baltimore II, the Virginia, Spirit of South Carolina, and now this, and also the...
San Diego boat.
Red sand with the... Yeah.
Well, I know there's a beautiful sense of community. I don't know if you spend any time on the water yourself or sailing, but there's a camaraderie among shipmates, and I find that on the boat, working on the boat. And of course, most of us hope to sail together one day on the Matthew Turner, once we get her splashed.
The building process in itself is fascinating and rewarding. So, if that's something you really like, which I do. Then build something, which I'm doing. And fortunately, finding a lot of other people that find it fascinating and want to help. It's a little bit like painting the fence, you know?
Hey! What are you guys doing? You don't need to tie it up, just ride it down.
Yeah, roll it up. Just hop on, I got you.
And the best thing about this project is there's no ego.
Ready? Yeah.
Right, the volunteers are here to build a boat, and they do what they're told. It's not like, oh, would I do it like this, or I'd do it like that. They're like, oh, let's do it like he says, because I don't know how else to do it. So that's a huge advantage. There's no, you know, there's no arguing or, oh, well, you know, I'd do it like this, or I'd do it like that. So that it's been great, and everybody's really... motivated and excited to learn. Like, we have all the volunteers have some kind of, not all of them, but 90% have some kind of woodworking background. Like, we have lawyers, doctors, tugboat pilots, harbor pilots, you know, general contractors, furniture makers, guitar makers, all these guys that are woodworkers, but everybody wants to build a wooden boat because it's probably that's one of my passions is I love bending wood. And it's fun, it's satisfying, and it's beautiful when you're done. You know, it's a sculpture like no other. And so all these guys have that same passion, and it's great.
So it's really become a very a community endeavor, which is exciting and important in the long run, because without that community, who builds the ship and funds the ship and cares for the ship, it'll be hard to have it a very good business model, because it'll take money and people forever. And people who want to go out on the boat, people who want to help fix the boat, people help fund it, and that community grows. And it's like a college or a school or a church or something. As that community grows, that sort of ensures its sustainability.
There's a word that comes up often in the New Testament to describe God's love as steadfast. And that's how I think of Matthew Turner, the ship, as steadfast and sturdy. She won't disappoint you.
It's a life-changing experience. It's an experience that it's hard to replicate in many ways. You know, being propelled by the wind and having to deal with nature's forces directly puts a different light on things. I mean, you You say goodbye to the shore, and you live together out in nature with the power of nature on a sailing ship. You're there together. You have to work together. You rely on each other. And it's not a game out there. It's for real. I think there's a real lack of engaging in the physical world in nature. And that's who we are. We didn't grow up and we didn't evolve in this kind of atmosphere we find ourselves. We evolve, you know, in nature. And when we back away from that very far, I think we lose something precious about our humanness.